Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to the only radio that matters. BBS Talk Radio. Give me a beat. Broadcasting live from high atop the BBS Talk Radio building, you're listening to the Sam and Manu Show.
Good morning once again, and welcome to Thursday. Good morning, Manu.
Finally, one more day to go.
Yeah, you ready? Waiting for the weekend already?
Yeah, I actually have my first rehearsal for a one-woman show.
Wow.
That I was just told, called last night.
Mm-hmm.
Letting me know that from my audition that I had done a while ago.
Uh-huh.
That they want me on the team.
Wow.
So basically what it is, it's a group of women, four or five women, who do like a 15 to 20 minute piece on whatever topic, you know, whether it's storytelling or, I think it's mainly storytelling, and perhaps put it into a monologue or something like that. So there's five of us women, four or five of us women, and we go on stage.
So that's like a stage thing.
It's a stage thing. It's going to be held on Saturday, the 19th of this month, April, which is Saturday.
It's just one night? It's not like a regular gig or anything?
It's probably going to be a regular gig now for once a month. It's been an event that's been going on once a month.
Oh.
And so I just got word last night, like at about, 10 o'clock. Yeah, it was that late. It was 10 o'clock.
Really? They'd call you that late, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what it comes down to. Sometimes you get calls in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Like, hey, this is we're proposing this to you. And so we talked for probably an hour about what topics or what kind of storytelling I would be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, looks like I'm going to be doing it.
Congratulations. At
the Complex Theater.
Where's that at?
Complex Theater is on Santa Monica Boulevard, kind of like near, where is it? Well, I mean,
like after Hollywood?
Yeah, it's in Hollywood, yes.
Right.
I have to sneeze.
Bless you. So
wow.
That's nice. I mean, so are you going to have to memorize everything?
No, I think what I have to do, I mean, I have to prepare a skeleton, of my storytelling, and then I'll be meeting with the producer and director on Sunday, and then I'll be presenting this to them. So basically, it would be a guideline that I would have to, stick to or remain on.
Right.
So basically, the concept that they want to use me for. Is like calling arm candy, and it's not necessary. Well, and so basically, I have to go through all my past relationships, so to speak, and where I have been kind of like in a position of being arm candy, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I have a
arm candy. Is that like a trophy wife type of a thing where you're
kinda,
trying to show off?
Or you're just dating someone that's like totally not your ploy. I'll probably talk about the jockey that I dated. Like he was this really well-known jockey in Townsville, and I'll probably talk about my relationship with a movie star, and I'll probably talk about my relationship with the gay man. You know what I mean?
Sounds interesting.
I'll probably just use maybe three or four specific things, and then describe some really funny stuff about it.
Sounds good. Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
So am I invited?
Yeah, everyone's invited.
Oh, cool.
Everyone's invited. It would
so you'll
be
have
really,
to announce it right before.
This will be really the show. Yeah. She's already told me, she's the producer, she's already told me that I need to start promoting the show and getting people to come in. It is a small theater, but she wants to make sure that we have it full.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you got a lot of fans. I'm sure some people are going to come and watch you.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm kind of like stoked. It's like, oh, wow. You know what? This is going to be my first theater performance since my studies up in Seattle.
Wow. Nice. Do you like theater?
Well, the theatre, yes, I do, very much so. But my theatre that I was studying up in Seattle was kind of like really dramatic and very like dark, you know, dark, deep, dark digging kind of thing. And then also the productions, my roles that I did on the two productions that I did were really disturbing roles. So this is the first time that I'm actually going in theater and doing like a comedic improvised thing. So, you know, hey, I think I can do it.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure you can do it.
Yeah. We'll see.
Well, Manu, the new theater actress. Well, I'm excited for you. I really am.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
No pay, of course.
And theater is, I think it's nice because you get the immediate reaction of the audience, you know.
Yeah, you know what? That was one thing that, you know, I remember experiencing specifically when I was acting up in Seattle. And then after the show, you know, there's always that mingle, you know, with the audience afterwards and so on. And, like, I remember, oh, my God, I remember playing this role called Lou Allen. It was the production called, oh, gosh, my brain has just gone dead. But anyway, Lou Allen was a very abused mother, and then hence she was very abusive towards her child. Very poor, living in poverty, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so she had social services take her child away, and then she was dealing with all that, you know what I mean? So it was kind of like, it was really, really dark and deep kind of thing. And anyways, I had so many people come up to me and just like, oh my God, that just really touched, and I was crying. And I mean, you know, like, because I could actually hear, you know, I remember when I was going through these things on stage, I remember hearing a couple of women, you know, like blurt out a cry, you know, that like they're trying to hold it in, but they can't. And so they blurt out like a big sob or something like that. And I was like, oh my God, I did that. You know, in my mind, it's like, oh my God, I did that. Yeah. So
good for you. Good for you. So how are you doing today?
I had a really long night at work last night. We had the LA Times in, and we had LA.com in. We're working with a PR group called Wagtail, a publicist, and so on. So they brought that in specifically to meet me. Looks like my job is secure, thank God.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're staying. Good.
I guess so.
Good. Bloody. All right. Well, you're full of good news today, so that's good, Manu. You should be smiling.
Yeah. No, it was just a really long night.
Yeah.
Because after that, then I had the phone call with, you know, the producer of the theater. So it was really long.
Yeah.
And then I was on the phone, you know, for like until like after midnight last night.
Well, exciting life you have. I mean, you know, no time to sleep.
No, I didn't even check my emails to check for auditions or anything like that. So, but anyways.
Yeah. Anyway, we got two guests here. One was going to be in the studio, but he's going to call instead.
Oh,
and then we have another woman that's going to call. Now, she's into, like, karma and stuff and spirituality and so forth. So, she offered to do a reading on me. So I sent her my my birth date and everything. And
all
she's
going
to call in, and we'll see what things she can reveal about me. You know, I'm like really curious. I mean, because she doesn't know me.
And you.
And how funny,
because you don't even believe in this stuff.
Exactly. You know, so that's what I'm saying. I'll be convinced if she can bring up some stuff. But but it can't be stuff that you can Google me and find out about, or stuff that I say on the radio.
Right.
You know, because it has to be something that I've not brought up at all. So I'm looking forward to that. And she's got a book, a pretty interesting book as well. So so we've got two guests today to look forward to. So we hope you stay with us. Our call-in number is 818-602-4498. And the lines are open, as they say.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, like, again, I was listening to the news on the radio this morning on the way here. Like, China China is trying to revamp their entire, like economics, mm-hmm. How they're living economically. Because right now, as you already know, most countries are relying on China mm-hmm. for, cheap labor and cheap items, and everything's made in China, but they're right. easily breakable, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, of course, a lot of, like Nike and so on all get made over there, mm-hmm. To cut costs on labor, China has now decided that they want to redevelop, completely turn over their economics, raise labor costs and everything like that, and also start importing and exporting like intelligence goods and everything like that. Mm. So they're really looking into becoming a country that is going to be economically successful mm-hmm. on the intelligence level, yeah. on the same level as the U.S., on the same level as Japan, and so on.
Yeah. Well, every communist country realized that when they open their doors
yeah.
and their borders, then they become successful. And,
yeah.
And their economies flourish and stuff. So
yeah.
they realize they don't have a choice, So I think slowly but surely communism is going to fall apart. It's just a matter of time.
I think so too. I think so too.
It just can't go
and
on
they
forever.
They did mention something a little bit about that, about the communists, mm-hmm. they're starting to realize that it's not working, particularly now with the Tibetan
right.
Issues going on, because mm-hmm. that is a separate country. However, China wants to hold on to Tibet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we've got all this political stuff going on and violence, unfortunately, going over there, mm-hmm. Against Dalai Lama, and they're like accusing Dalai Lama mm-hmm. the cause of all this violence.
Yeah.
He doesn't even live there. He lives in India. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think that would be a good thing. But sad to say, we are all going to start seeing price rises, and we're not talking small price rises. Mm-hmm. We're talking about huge price rises of, like Nikes and those kind of brand names
right.
that are being
manufactured
in China,
in China right.
because they're going to be raising labor costs, etc.
Right.
So
Okay, well, whatever happens with China, but we are going to have the Olympics there, and I wonder how things are going to happen,
It's
going to be kind of intriguing to see how things develop.
But they're already saying that by spring 2009, that's when everything that is made in China, that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. is going to, definitely change.
Mm. Okay, well, we're looking forward to that.
I don't think so.
I wanted to quickly go over this letter that I got, and this is, Manu, from someone who is posing as you. Okay, now, I don't know why anybody would do this, but this is sort of like an attack on me, and I thought I'd go through it for a couple minutes. And I'll read it to you, and you tell me. The letter is riddled with misspellings and so forth and some incoherent sentences, but we'll try to get through it. So this thing starts with, "Are you tired, Sam? Sounds like it. Pretty ordinary trying to psych out a good-looking woman. You should know you'll lose." But they wrote loose. Okay, so you should know you'll lose. Yes, you are tired. You should know by now that good-looking women have had years of practice at politely telling men that they don't have a chance. Not even a sniff of a chance. Women's defense mechanisms run on auto. Okay, so they're starting by bashing me first of all because I'm tired, and just for the record, when I mention I am tired, it's when you ask me how I'm doing, and also because I am tired, but I never complain about it. I mean, there's nothing, I never complain about being tired. It's all part of it, and I'm having a blast doing this show. So so much for that. Good-looking women have had years of practice at politely telling men that they don't have a chance. Now, who's thinking here that I need a chance with anybody? I mean, this presumes that I'm trying to get a chance with you, and and I don't understand this. I mean, well, you know, we're here, we love each other, we're together and stuff, but I would never make an advance at Manu. This is for the record. And because we're both happily
maybe they're saying like my tits my cleavage
when I comment on that.
Yeah.
Okay, but no, I never looked for a chance with Manu, so that's not. And the funny thing is for them to speak for you, like you don't have a sniff of a chance. Women's defense mechanisms run on auto, whatever the fuck that means.
Okay, actually, I'm not quite sure what
yeah,
that means.
Let's move on. Remember, women have got it all over men. They multitask. Okay, now I'm asking you, okay, how do women have it all over men when they multitask? Okay, I think I multitask a lot. I'm from 5 o'clock till midnight multitasking all fucking day. Okay, so and so it goes on to say they can do lots of things simultaneously, you know what I mean, whilst thinking about what's in the fridge of or larder.
Yeah, I'm not.
What's larder?
Sure. I don't know.
What they're doing on the weekend, blah blah blah. Again, sort of incoherent. And so, okay, so this is someone who's obviously looking to put down men and make women look better, which I have no problem with. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion. Then it says, no, you're not tired. You're just multitasking. So you must therefore be getting bitchy. Okay. Now, I don't know. I mean, have I seemed bitchy to you? I mean, we've had some conversations and stuff, but I think bitchy is just to constantly bug somebody and irritate them or, you know, put them down or stuff. I mean, how do you define bitchy, Manu? How am I bitchy? I don't understand.
Like the cat claw?
Yeah.
Okay.
Multitasking. I mean, this person is really onto that multitasking thing, okay? This like the only women, the only thing that women have that they feel they're superior to men? I don't know, but that's what this seems to say.
Oh.
So, no, you're not tired. You're just multitasking. So, I mean, here they're admitting that men can multitask. So that totally invalidates the second paragraph that came before that. So, so you must therefore be getting bitchy. Multitasking really strains men. I give you G.W. Bush. If you think the U.S. is the best place, try getting out more. Okay. I do think the U.S. is the best place in the world to live. That's just my opinion. Okay. And to try to get out more, I get out all the fucking time. I've been halfway across the world. Okay. And I've been to many countries. And yes, that led me to believe, look, I love different places. I lived in South Africa for a year, had a blast, lived in Israel for a year, traveled all over Europe, America, Canada, and yes, this is the best place in the fucking world. And I'll always say that till the day I die. So, so to try to get out more, I've been out, folks, and I've discovered that the U.S. is where everybody seems to want to go to, so there's got to be something right about this. So obviously this was written by someone who's not American, which again, we welcome listeners from all over the world. That's what internet radio is all about. But this person obviously had felt that they had to attack me somehow, and but I don't see what they're getting out of this. So this is, plan your holiday soon. Take a spa, get one of those massages where your back is kneaded by the feet of a well-trained Thai or a Japanese lass. Okay, now lass is a woman or a girl in English. And then play more world artists. And then they give a whole view here, and we obviously don't play copyrighted music anymore. Thanks for the show. Life is not a rehearsal. Duh.
But actually, if you look at the, you know what, I'm just like, you know what, I'm just kind of like reading this. Mm-hmm. And he's like pulled out specific things, like try... Okay, Deborah Conway, It's Only the Beginning.
Oh, I see. I should have read the titles
okay,
of the song.
Okay, so Paul Kelly, To Her Door. I've never heard of those two songs. Mm-hmm. Kate Sobrano?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Pash?
Pash. I don't know what those songs are.
I've never heard of them either.
What does Pash mean?
I don't know.
Okay.
Skyhooks, Women in Uniform. Oh, yeah, I remember that one. Another Skyhooks, You Just Like Me Cause I'm Good in Bed. Oh, yeah, I remember that song. Have you ever heard that song?
No.
It's actually kind of funny.
Is it?
Yeah.
We'll have to
And then
it.
The Divinals, of course, we all remember this.
I touch myself.
All
right. So, okay, I don't know how this relates to the letter, but obviously,
I don't know.
You know, someone looking to bash me, and this is good. This is good. I love this kind of stuff. So keep writing. I appreciate you actually taking the time to write this after listening, obviously, and that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. So if you guys want your voices heard over the air and you don't want to call, then just write us an email and we'll read it on the air and we'll comment on it. So so that's that. So fuck it now. We can close that. And
did you know Obama raised $40 million in March?
In March alone?
In
wow.
March alone. Can wow. you believe that?
That's a lot of fucking money.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Well, he's going to win for sure now. I mean, he's got... he's
40 million!
Yeah. I mean, he's flush with cash, and Hillary can't pay her bills.
No,
what the fuck?
You know what? You're right.
Yeah. Hillary can't pay her bills. And that doesn't look very good.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Because it doesn't make that... you know, it doesn't say that she can... Like what you said... you know, organize her campaign
right.
correctly.
How would she run
and
a country?
How should we? Yeah, how she? Because my God, if I was running for president and I'm finding out that my campaign leader isn't paying bills or doing the right thing, and then that gets all flashed over.
Mm-hmm.
For one, you're fucking fired, and second, I'm suing you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, like, can you imagine how she's feeling right now?
Yeah.
This could really hurt. This is hurting
her.
Yeah,
they could lose her the election, you know.
For sure.
Who knows? But she's not doing very well right now, so
no.
we'll see. I mean, they keep getting at each other.
It's a little sad, though, because, you know, I want her to stay up there for some reason,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's really difficult, you know, because I really like Obama. I do. And I think it would be very... it's going to be so enormous if he's elected president.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would change the whole world's perspective
mm-hmm.
on America completely. It's going to be an upside down thing.
Yeah.
But I think the same effect is going to happen with Hillary. However, the only thing that I can see with Hillary is that she's already had a history of presidential, you know, being the first lady and, of
right.
course, you know, Bill Clinton being president.
Yeah.
And he is still the favorite. I mean, everyone still loves Bill Clinton.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
But the thing is, we got to remember, we can't elect her because of him, you know. Yes, we're going to get 2-for-1 when
right.
we elect her.
Yeah, exactly.
But at the same time, you know, we need to see her standing on her own. And some people in the media are really questioning her experience because she keeps emphasizing that, you know, I've got more experience, blah, blah, blah. And people are saying, what has she done? She's only been a senator and this and that. But, you know,
Murray, you can imagine that when her husband was, you know, when Bill was president, she would have been right up in there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she certainly followed every move that he's made, and she has full knowledge
mm-hmm.
of everything that he's done. And I'm sure they've had, you know, could you imagine just being in that room of those two together? You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
the conversations.
Especially after the Monica Lewinsky.
Well, yeah, that too. But I mean, the conversations that they would have, the discussions, discussing mm-hmm. matters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think that would be so awesome.
Yeah.
Particularly now. Mm-hmm. My goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's when you think about it, that's kind of very, very powerful.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if they soften up when they have sex together, you know, Bill and Hillary. Because, I mean, they're very tough
on
the outside, you know?
I think so. I can imagine that those two have a very, very passionate love life.
You do think that they do?
I think so, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What makes you say that?
I don't know. You know, I mean, like, you know, you look at him and he's become a lot more humble. You can sense,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? Like a little bit more humble. And I think since he's been out of presidency and out of politics a little bit,
mm-hmm.
he's probably stepped back and viewed a few more things. And since George Bush has been in,
mm-hmm.
he's probably standing back going like, oh my goodness. I mean, can you imagine what he's saying?
Yeah.
You know, and...
Not that we really care.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, I actually really see her as being, you know, a compassionate person anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And sometimes that may not lead to being a good leader because you could have too much compassion. But I think their energy together is really awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I
don't know.
I think
I hope something happens where things will change. But the way it looks now is the candidate for the Democratic ticket is not going to be chosen by the primaries because the primaries end in June, I believe, when they're going to have the convention, the Democratic convention.
Right.
And at which point then superdelegates are going to decide who's going to win.
You
so,
know what?
So it
what
comes
is
down
this
to fucking
superdelegates.
Well, it's people within the party, like leaders of the Democratic Party, that are going to
really?
Get to choose. Yeah, and which is fucked, you know, because
that
so
is
much for
fucked.
So much for
so much
all
for
the voting,
all the, yeah,
you know, all the
exactly.
voting we've done. It's going to boil down to that.
So you know? Much for civil. No wonder we have no power. No wonder we have no place to stand and stand up for our civil rights.
Yeah. I know. I mean, that's politics. What are you going to do? You know, I don't know that there's a better system yet, but...
Make it compulsory and make it so that superdelegates can't vote because they don't do that in any other country.
Yeah, but apparently if they're tied, if the two candidates are tied, how are you going to break that tie? So that's what they figure, you know. But, yeah, I mean...
But I think it's pretty clear that it's not a tie anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
No, not really. I think they're still pretty close.
Hmm.
I still think they're pretty close. She's not going to give up. I mean, come on, I wouldn't.
No, no. You know what? I don't think she should give up anyways, regardless.
Yeah.
You go. You go. Go, Hillary, go.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. But the funny thing is, in the end, probably McCain's going to win.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Please. Please, please, please.
So there's been a new study that says sex takes 3 to 13 minutes. Okay? So they did a survey of sex therapists, and they're trying to find, like, the optimal amount of time for intercourse. So they're finding that the median time for sexual intercourse was 7.3 minutes. So that does not include foreplay. That's just intercourse.
What?
So that's the average, yeah. So, I mean, obviously some men stay... I can go
wow.
on for a long time, but they're saying the average is not that high at all. They're saying 1 to 2 minutes is too short, okay? But anything beyond that,
duh.
Yeah, 1 to 2 minutes is way too fucking short. I feel people.
I mean,
we
might as well have an artificial vagina because we ain't gonna feel shit. Right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying though. Is that? But this is not the optimal. What they're saying is that. You know, people that only have it for 1 to 2 minutes, obviously, that's too short. You know?
Yeah.
According to the to all those sex therapists. So they did a 4-week study of 1,500 couples.
Wow.
And yeah, the women in the study were armed with stopwatches.
What? Are you
funny?
Serious?
Yeah. I mean, what the fuck is that? It's like,
oh my god!
Yeah, so I guess they're measuring this by the men's ability to last.
That's crazy.
Know? Yeah,
that's crazy.
Anyway, we got a phone call coming in. I have a feeling that's our guest. Good morning. You're on the air with Sam and Manu. Who's calling?
Good morning, Sam. This is Marguerite Manning. How are you?
Oh, Marguerite, how are you? We've been expecting your call.
It's nice to talk to you. Thanks for having me on. Good morning, Manu. It's nice to meet you both.
Yeah.
Good morning, Marguerite.
Thank you. Where
what
are you calling from?
Voice.
Yeah. Where are you calling from, Marguerite?
I'm calling from Washington, D.C.
Oh, wow.
Instead of the politics down here in the nation's capital. How are
yeah.
you all?
We're fine. You guys probably get more than your share of politics and stuff.
I have enough of my share of politics around here. So.
I'm sure.
Yeah, we just got finished talking about politics, too.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so, but you're bringing us something quite different, Marguerite, and you described a little bit on the email for me, but why didn't you describe to us exactly what is it that you do? You
okay.
have a book that came out. We want to hear about that. So, yeah, so tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, Llewellyn just published my book last year, and it's called Cosmic Karma. And I wrote this book combining the spirituality of the science and the spirit of astrology, which is exactly what it was in the first days that it came into our lives. And what I try to explain to people, I'm really, really tired of astrology getting a bum rap and always being in the occult section. And I think the thing I'm most proud of is that my book, Cosmic Karma, is in the self-help section, which is exactly where it belongs, because it gives us a brand new understanding of the most important thing in our lives, which is ourselves. And that's what I feel very, very proud about. But what I was most inspired by was our ancient astrologers who were all our ancient astronomers, because way back in those days, astrology and astronomy were one science. They were practiced together.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. How long ago was
separated.
That?
Oh, this was very, very early on when even in Egyptian times, when astrology first came into, when we first started studying the star, Sam, this is the way it was. Astrology and astronomy was one science. The church later on separated the two because they didn't want people running to their local astrologer. They wanted to be able to control what was going on in during the Renaissance time, during everyone's lives. But what I loved most about and why I'm most inspired by our ancient astronomers, they realized that the universe we lived in was made up of nothing but energy, as our every scientist today will tell you.
Right.
The only difference is that they said that this universe operated on three levels of energy. It operated on the physical, it operated on the mental, and here's the kicker, it operated to them on the spiritual as well.
Right.
So to them, science was just as much spiritual as it was science. And I think when the hard scientists today that dimension of energy out of evaluating this universe, they're cutting off one of the major levels that energy operates on in this universe. And I think when our ancient astronomers realized that this is how it worked, they studied the heavens and as a whole and the way celestial objects moved, and that was the astronomy part of what they did. Then they took the way those celestial objects moved and told us and studied and discovered how those movements affected us down here below. That was the astrology.
Right.
And both were very mathematical, both were very scientific, very much in the way meteorology is practiced today. When you turn on the radio and listen to a forecast, you don't have a meteorologist telling you there'll be 3 feet of snow, you're going to be in an accident. They tell you there, in your particular way, there will be 3 feet of snow, and you do with that information what you will. Put on snow tires, get chains, go buy a winter coat. And that's where I think astrology has gotten the bum rap, that it's so predictive and it's voodoo and people are going to tell us what's happening to us.
Uh-huh.
Not at all. They tell us based on the energies we were born into, what influences are around us. And again, what I call our contract with the universe, is the energies that we were born into, just like any environment. Every psychologist today will tell you your environment makes up 90% of who you are. Why not your universal environment?
So when
I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say, when you are given this information, like you said, meteorologist says that there's going to be 3 feet of snow.
Right.
And it's information that you are given so that it can direct you in some way and you become aware of the subject. It's the same with astrology. You are given particular information.
You're empowered with it.
And therefore, it allows you to become more conscious of that knowledge, that little bit of knowledge that's been given to you, and then it gives you a little bit more power to behave upon that or to
Absolutely.
Work on that or, you know what I mean, follow it through.
And what I say to people, we look at it backwards. You would never walk into the CBS newsroom and turn around and say the 15 people, how many of you have a degree in journalism? And if 14 of them raised their hand, you would never turn to me and say, isn't that a coincidence? You'd say, this is what they're here for. And it's the same with astrology. If I walked into you and found out that you had what I call your degree in Gemini, and you were such a great communicator, you were excellent at delivering an exchange of language, information, people, ideas, most people say, see, that's a coincidence. I'm just like a Gemini. No, you're not. You're here because you came to the world when the sun was wending its way through the constellation Gemini because you earned those skills, and now you're here to use them.
Yeah.
But what did you say you were going to do? That's your contract.
Right.
Your contract is what you said you were going to do with the energies. Not because God is going to punish you, or God is standing there tapping his foot, or the universe expects to make good, but because you chose to evolve. Because I think when we're here on planet Earth, it's all about growth. Everything else is background music.
Wow.
We have fun, we laugh, we have sex, we drink, we do it all, and we're supposed to have it all, but it's all about growth.
Right.
And if we don't get that, to me, the hell is, and every single religion practices accountability for the soul in one form or another. People say to me, I don't believe in karma. I say, do you believe in heaven or hell? Yes, well, guess what? You do.
Hmm.
Because all karma is the spiritual version of cause and effect. Whatever energy we put out on one level comes back to us on another because this universe is divine energy. God isn't punishing. We're just getting what we put out, good, bad, or fattening, because it has to come in order for the universe to stay balanced. So knowing that, what I tell people, it's so empowering to know what energies you've put out so that you can deal with them. It's not about punishment and reward. It's about living up to your contract. What did you say you were coming in to do in this lifetime? And sure, we're human. We bring baggage. We bring past life issues. But I found it was really empowering when people found out exactly what they were. Because it's really fun because you're kind of putting the soul on the carpet and saying, this is what you signed up for. It kind of takes us off the human hook. And we realize it resonates with soul that we have things that we said we wanted to do. And the only per hurting is ourselves when we choose not to do them. No one's going to get mad at us. No one's going to punish us. If you believe in the collective consciousness or God, the creative mind, or the universal mind, you believe there's abundance, wisdom, prosperity for all of us. And I do too. Every single religion teaches it. But the only way to access it is through the higher consciousness of our soul. And until we start getting the soul up off the couch in this lifetime and getting into the game, we're not going to be the best human beings we can be.
Right. Now, let me ask you this, because people often ask this. How can we prove we have a soul?
Excuse me, how can we what, Sam?
Prove that we have a soul.
Well, it's funny you say that. That's the first line in my book. I said, if you're one of those people who don't, put the book back on the shelf. It's not for you. And let me tell you something very interesting, because this isn't just a spirit guide to the soul. It's a self-help book for the soul, cosmic karma. Because in all the research that I've done, what I found most interesting is even the atheists that I interviewed or became my clients, every single one of them believed that we had a soul. Because what the soul is that spark of individuality in each of us that makes us different than the other. What we like to call our free will or our will. That's our soul, the unconscious part of us that drives us. A tendency to link soul with religion and because it is spiritual. But a lot of people don't understand that spirituality doesn't mean religion. Spirituality is the highest form of intellect.
Right.
My two favorite heroes of all time, Carl Sagan and Edgar Cayce, both got that the universe is so much more spiritual than we tend to look at it.
Right.
Yes.
And, let me tell you, spirituality, religion, spirituality isn't what's going on in the Middle East today. One has nothing to do with the other. Religion is how some of us choose to practice our spirituality. But spirituality is getting in touch with that higher part of you that just wants to grow and be a better person. The spirit in us. The spirit is our soul. So if you don't believe that you have a soul, obviously this is not for you, because then you don't believe that you can evolve and you can grow and you're going to come back and get better and higher and each time. And there's one thing the universe has plenty of, it's time. So I think there's no time like the present to start working on ourselves, but to do it in a way where we get the fact that ability is 90% of us growing and learning. Because if we won't recognize where we've made our mistakes or where we want to grow, we'll fail. And this is the expression I've always used, I used it when I was raising my children too, look down at your own 2 feet. And it's not about blame or judgment. It's about if you like where you are and you look down at your own 2 feet, they got you there and they can get you higher. If you don't like where you are, look down at your own 2 feet. They got you there and they can get you out. So I really get a little tired of people saying, oh, I don't like to judge and it's not about judgment. Of course not, but it's so about ability in this world. I think if we don't stand up to, what we've done and what we can do, we'll never evolve as a society and we'll never evolve as individuals. Yeah. And how can we be a better society unless we do?
You know, when you're talking about evolving, I mean, you study a lot about the Egyptian astrology and so on. Have you... I'm interested in what insight you have about the Mayan calendar and the astrology of the Mayan and how that's working and the fact that 2012 is coming up.
In the sense of, you mean, I haven't studied Menu very much the Mayan in that aspect of astrology. I tend to use the astrology more as a therapeutic self-help tool.
Right.
And I know a lot of people have theories about 2012. I don't buy into any of those. I'm not into those. I don't believe anything is fait accompli. I believe
right.
that these are energies that are potentials and possibilities, and
right.
we can use them to the best of our ability, of what our soul promised to do. But it's
yeah.
only our fate if we live up to it.
Right.
So do you think our fate is or our future is predetermined, or do you believe in the free choice?
I believe that they are not mutually exclusive. I believe that you've come into this. I believe that you came into both of all of them into this incarnation, just like we would sign up for college courses. And we said to the universe, this is where we want to get better. This is where we want to grow. This is what we want to do. The universe said, okay, get in line. Here you go. We come down. And then when the universe does nothing but provide us with all the opportunities for that growth by bringing challenging situations, by bringing us events that will help us evolve, by bringing us good stuff, by bringing us challenging things, we turn around and we say, poor me. How could we? What's wrong with me? It's my poor luck. It's like signing up for a class and then getting mad when the teacher walks into the room. We always have the choice of walking away or doing what we said we wanted to do. So, yes, it's destiny. Our destiny is what we signed up for, but it's never our fate unless we live up to it.
Yeah.
I see.
We can all these
yeah.
possibilities and potentials, but if we don't show up in class, it ain't going to happen.
Right.
And I think that's what I really believe. That's what hell is. I believe we can just go to the same class over and over and over again because we never really rolled up our sleeves and did what we said we were here to do. So I think you be destined for something, but it's not fated unless you choose to you know, put in the time, play by the rules, and work like a dog.
Yeah. So going back to astrology, you feel that planets and stars have an effect on how we behave, and what about does it affect the outcome of things as well?
Well, actually, Sam, what it is your think of it as your cosmic DNA. You come into this incarnation. It wasn't an accident on the day you were born. The day you were born, everything lined up to reflect your contract, what you said you wanted to do in this lifetime.
Right, so the soul kind of waited for that.
That actually triggered your birth. The
right.
day the universal clock moved into your chosen birth energies by your soul, that triggered your birth. So you come in this incarnation, that celestial sky. Is a physical, okay, so we said physical, so it's scientific, is a physical documentation of what Sam Hansen said he wanted to accomplish in this lifetime. Is anybody going to beat you up if you don't? Nope. Is anybody going to get mad at you? Nope. If you do, that's what your destiny is. That's the universal reward.
So that's
just like
why
that's
why they ask where you were born, what time you were born,
and the place.
It's
and
very
the place
scientific,
and everything
absolutely,
like that.
Manu. There's three universal rulers that are needed to find out exactly what the sky, what your environment like. And those three universal rulers are the date of your birth, so we know exactly where everything was positioned at the time, the time of birth, so we know the tilt of the Earth's axis in relationship to those fixed stars, and the place, so we have the geographical latitude and longitude location, so we know it lines up to everything in the universe. And then we take what we call a universal snapshot. That
wow.
is your contract with the universe.
Okay.
Wow.
And what I find is interesting about that is it's the very energies that we were physically born under and our soul was spiritually born into. So on an unconscious level, they're logged and burned into our soul's memory. Of course, we don't remember them on a conscious level because, I guess, with some of our past lives, it could be daunting. We wouldn't want to get up in the morning. But they're there to remind our soul exactly what it is it chose in this lifetime. And I think the reason that we're coming into this age where we're all questioning our spirituality and looking for answers, I truly believe that whether it's numerology, whether it's astrology, whether it's psychic mediumship. I think there are so many different ways to get to the answer of how this universe vibrates and works.
You know, our connection is so terrible. Do you happen to have a landline by any chance, Marguerite?
No, I don't. I'm on a landline. And I'm on my headset, and I'm having no problem hearing you. Are you having difficulty hearing me?
Yeah, it's breaking up and there's noise, but that's okay. I think it's better now. So, so that brings us to the fact that you asked me for my birth date and place and everything, and you said you'd do a chart for me.
And I have to tell you, Sam, the one thing that's absolutely necessary and you weren't sure about was your time.
Oh, okay.
Okay, well, so you told me about 2 p.m. And this, I usually don't do a chart unless I have all the accurate information, because what the time of your birth does for me is it tilts the axis that I can see exactly where everything was. But just to give you an idea.
No, I'm pretty sure that I was born at 2 p.m.
Okay. And then, of course, there's not enough time to do a full-scale reading on you. But what I would like to do is what I do many times for hosts over the phone. I do mini-read for people who call in. And I usually start with the 12th house because that's the soul's house, and that gives me kind of like your baggage that you brought into this life with you from your most recent past life, but it also tells me your gifts. But it gives me kind of the wallpaper or the background of where your soul is coming for you from. I kind of think of it as the cosmic contrails. You whooshed into this life, and this is the stuff that you brought back with you. But it's also your improper programming in this life, Sam. It's what happened to you in the last that was so horrific that you suppressed. So let me just very briefly tell me, if your time is accurate, this will resonate with your soul on some level. It should, because, and again, the time is very, very important. You begin, Sam, with Leo on your 12th house cusp, and that tells me your soul's previous existence to this life was one of personal distinction, creative brilliance, and courageous leadership. You were some type of leader. And based on Pluto in that 12th and the aspects that's being made, I would feel that you were some kind of either government or political or military lead.